global markets rise after China cuts interest rates in a surprise move, plus why investors are protesting executive pay packages at 24 major firms. And President Biden kicks off his four-day visit to Asia.
It's to send a message to China that the U.S. has not forgotten about the Asia-Pacific region, even while the war in Ukraine is getting most of the attention.
It's Friday, May 20th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Global stocks and U.S. equity futures have risen today, recovering some ground after the S&P 500 came close to falling into a bear market yesterday. In a surprise move today, China's central bank cut its benchmark rate for loans of 5 years or more to 4.45% from 4.6, the biggest single reduction since the rate entered the bank's policy armory in 2019. WSJ China Markets reporter Rebecca Fung has more.
This effectively makes it cheaper for people to take out mortgages and therefore seen as a boost to China's property market, which actually is a significant growth driver for China's economy. The market has definitely reacted quite positively to the rate cut. That said, some economists are skeptical about how effective this rate cut can be, so long as China still sticks to its very rigid zero tolerance approach to COVID-19.
U.S. President Joe Biden has begun a three-day visit to South Korea and is due to visit a Samsung semiconductor factory today as the U.S. seeks to strengthen supply chains and reboot its own manufacturing amid competition with China. We'll have more on the broader economic and defense goals of Biden's visit to Asia later in the show. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended that children aged 5 to 11 receive the newly authorized COVID-19 booster shot from Pfizer and BioNTech. The shots are to be given 5 months after a second dose of the vaccine. On Thursday, the CDC also said it was strengthening its recommendation that people 12 years and older who are immunocompromised, as well as those who are 50 and older, should receive a second booster dose at least 4 months after their first. And Boeing's Starliner spacecraft blasted off for the International Space Station last night, despite facing an issue with two of the thrusters the vehicle uses. The Starliner so far hasn't been able to complete a test mission to the orbiting facility, delaying NASA's plan to be able to call on two different U.S. companies to handle human flights to the space station. To date, only Elon Musk's SpaceX has proven its vehicle capable of making it to and from the facility. Investors in 24 major U.S. companies, including JPMorgan Chase and Intel, have voiced their displeasure with executive compensation packages at recent annual meetings. WSJ Corporate Bureau Chief Marcelo Prince has been tracking the results of these say-on-pay votes, and he joins us now with a look at what is driving this investor frustration. Hi, Marcelo.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for having me.
So explain what exactly is happening here and how unusual it is to see this.
It's extremely unusual. I mean, every year companies have to poll their shareholders to vote on the pay packages and the pay policies that they adopt for their top executives. Historically, these are widely supported by 90% or more of the shares. But what we've seen in the last few years is that a handful of some really big blue chip companies, investors are withholding their support for the packages. And there's different reasons at each company, but there's an overarching issue, which is companies' governance and the way they handle pay and other ESG issues are getting greater scrutiny from investors, not just activist investors, but major institutional investors. And when there are large pay awards, like big-time stock grants or some kind of stock option package that really pushes up what the CEO could end up making, sometimes those are falling under greater scrutiny. And that's what we saw this year, where a couple of companies that did these special one-time grants, the explanations they gave basically didn't satisfy investors. And in a couple of cases, they only got 30% of the shareholder vote in support of their plans. What is interesting is in some cases, when there's a protest like this, The boards will talk to big investors. They'll make changes the subsequent year in order to address those concerns. But this year we saw 7 S&P 500 companies that failed to get support for 2 years in a row. So even after they took some measures to make changes. So certainly there's some tension between big investors and sort of the way boards are paying their leaders.
And Marcelo, could this investor protest about executive pay actually lead to changes in how companies pay their execs?
It's a good question. The votes themselves are not binding. So the companies don't have to, nobody has to give back any money or stock grants. But what you do end up seeing is boards, especially if there's a big enough protest vote, go out there, start to canvass their investors, see what their concerns are, and they'll make changes. And we've seen that in a couple of instances. They'll make changes to future pay policies. In very few cases, though, will executives give back pay or compensation they've been awarded. So I think that most companies don't want this kind of protest vote to show up at their annual meeting. So they'll make some adjustments.
That was WSJ Corporate Bureau Chief Marcelo Prince. Marcelo, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, President Biden is visiting Asia for the first time since taking office. We'll hear from our Tokyo Bureau Chief about what the president hopes to achieve on his visit after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Let's shift our focus now to Asia. President Biden is there now for the first time since coming into office, and WSJ Tokyo Bureau Chief Peter Landers joins us now with a look at what the Biden administration hopes to achieve with the visit. Hi, Peter. Thank you for being with us.
Sure thing.
Peter, we understand that defense is going to be front and center during this visit as the U.S. tries to refocus attention on countering China, a task that has obviously been overshadowed a bit by the war in Ukraine. What is Biden's aim on that defense front?
I think it's to send a message to China that the U.S. has not forgotten about the Asia-Pacific region, even while the war in Ukraine is getting most of the attention and can handle both issues at the same time. And I think photo opportunities are a big part of this visit. There aren't any new major defense agreements between the U.S. and Korea or U.S. and Japan or those kinds of trade agreements between individual countries at this summit. But what there will be is President Biden in the region, very close to China, in South Korea and in Japan, meeting with leaders of both those countries and India and Australia as well, and showing China that the U.S. is maintaining its presence here.
Considering, Peter, that some analysts believe the war in Ukraine may embolden China to increase military pressure on Taiwan, is Taiwan on the agenda too?
It definitely is, especially in Japan, where the U.S. and Japan have had a military alliance for many years that, for the earlier years, was really about the U.S. defending Japan in case of attack. And now, increasingly, the U.S.-Japan alliance is about both countries working together to respond to a potential Chinese attack on Taiwan. Of course, we don't know whether that would really happen, but defense means preparing for these kinds of situations.
But Peter, what is the U.S. position on Taiwan itself?
The U.S. has always had what they call strategic ambiguity regarding Taiwan, and there is some debate, which has not been resolved, about whether it's time to be clearer. The U.S. has not said that it would defend Taiwan if it was attacked by China, whereas other alliances that the U.S. has, for example, the NATO alliance with Europe or the alliance with Japan, is very explicitly saying to China, if you ever try to take any part of Japan, no matter how small, the United States military will come in there and fight alongside Japan to stop you from doing that. And the U.S. does not say that with regard to Taiwan. And yet there is a general assumption in the region that the U.S. would, in fact, step in a case like that. And so, yeah, we'll have to see what President Biden says about those scenarios. But I think increasingly the U.S. is hinting more strongly that it would work with Taiwan to protect itself against the Chinese invasion.
Turning now to Russia, how are countries in Asia responding to the U.S. call to sanction Russia over its invasion of Ukraine?
The U.S. has gotten strong support, especially from Japan and from South Korea, in sanctioning Russia. Now, Japan is still buying Russian oil and natural gas, as are European allies. But I think they're easing away from that, and eventually will be able to cut off Russian energy supplies and wean themselves from that dependence. But in other areas, in terms of sanctioning banks or sanctioning Vladimir Putin, Japan has been a strong backer of the U.S. position, as has Australia. And the one outlier there is India, which has taken a more neutral stance towards Russia. And they've had traditional ties going back to the era of the Soviet Union. And so at the Quad meeting that takes place Tuesday between the U.S., Japan, India, and Australia, I think there could be a 3-versus-1 scenario where three of the countries at the table agree strongly on a strong anti-Russia, pro-Ukraine position, and the fourth, India, is an outlier.
Switching away from defense now, Peter, President Biden is expected to launch during this visit a new trade initiative called the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. Just remind us again what that agreement really is and how consequential it may be.
It's still a nascent agreement that doesn't have much substance yet and isn't intended yet to have much substance. It's more an agreement to talk about a future agreement, or you could say it's a framework to talk about a framework. I think a bunch of countries will be announced as signing up to join these discussions: U.S., Japan, South Korea, India, perhaps a number of Southeast Asian nations, Thailand, Philippines. Several of those countries probably will also join the announcement and say, yes, we're glad to talk to the U.S. about an Indo-Pacific economic framework. But at this point, the substance is pretty thin. And one of the biggest asks, you might say, of these countries, especially the Southeast Asian countries, would be, can we get more access to the U.S. market and lower tariffs? And that really is not on the table from the U.S. perspective, mainly because of the political concerns in the U.S.
That was WSJ Tokyo Bureau Chief Peter Landers. Peter, a pleasure as always. Thanks so much.
Sure thing. You bet.
And finally, if you missed this story this week, maybe that's what the aliens wanted. On Tuesday, a U.S. House Intelligence Subcommittee held its first hearing in more than a half century about unidentified aerial phenomena, or what the rest of us call UFOs, and the risks they could pose to national security. WSJ reporter Joseph De Avila describes one of the video clips shown during the hearing.
You had this view of a cockpit, and off in the right, there's this spherical flash that occurs in a split second, and this is something that the government has called UAP. They don't know what it is. They can't explain what it is or how it moves so fast. And this video really shows the degree of difficulty they have at getting data and images of what these things are and explaining what they are, because it just happens so fast. It's literally a blink of an eye and it's gone.
All right, then. And that is What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.